hysteria, excitements, from the Beatles to the exaltation of the Holy Cross. What do I mean? Well, check in right now as we connect the dots between the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual. This is Father Voskan looking at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. This is episode number 588 of The Next Step. I'm asking you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting The Next Step with Father Voskan. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Voskan brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
I really don't know. 86,000 views. I don't know. 2 weeks ago, we published a video on Facebook regarding the renovations taking place at Etchmiadzin. This morning, the count was 86,000 views and shared throughout the world. I don't know what makes some of the videos viral, others just kind of like snoozers. I don't know what it is. We could say it's the acting skill, the ability to convey a message, but there is something. Recently, we've been just seeing these numbers pop up and sort of like building off one off of another. Hysterically, sometimes people approach these like, you gotta watch this. Hysteria. What makes certain things? What made Beatlemania? Many of you are listening are not old enough to remember this, but I know you've seen the videos of them. You've seen the clips of them. When the Beatles came, the British invasion, back in the early 1960s, when they came to America, they brought with them what was called Beatlemania. People went crazy. I mean, I'm not talking about just like clapping for a band or enthusiastically jumping up and, swaying with the tune. I'm talking about hysteria. Yeah, not just swaying with the tune, not just standing. I'm talking about actually fainting, dropping down, throwing your body down on the floor, passing out, clapping so hard, and trembling. In fact, you know, the Beatles, famous as they are, they stopped touring. 1965, 66. I mean, they came, the British invasion started right around end of 1964 is when they appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show. As you could say, that's a marker, their entry into America mainstream, right? Ed Sullivan, 1964. 1965, they had finished touring. 1 year. That's all they toured. That's all they could stand, because they would be in stadiums. They would be, they would try to sing. They would try to play music. They couldn't hear themselves. Yeah, that's true. They couldn't hear themselves play. And in fact, if you've been to modern concerts, you know that most singers, most performers, and I would say all of them have monitors just for themselves. Yeah, notice those big boxes on the floor are monitors that hit them with their own music so they can hear themselves play. Not so, and when the Beatles came, they had these primitive, by today's standard, very primitive. By those days' standards, wow, we used to look up to those giant Vox amplifiers, which were great in a small little room. But when you're talking about a stadium and filling it with these small little amplifiers, no, they couldn't do it. And they gave up. They gave up because of the hysteria that was revolving around their work. In fact, if you get a chance, I believe it came out a couple of years ago, and I don't remember the name, but we'll put it on the show notes. We'll look it up before the show's over. It was by Ron Howard. It was a documentary about the Beatles, about the phenomena of the Beatles. Highly recommended. It's an hour and a half movie, and very well made. I definitely recommend that you watch it. It gives you an idea of what we went through. It was more than just a band coming. It was a culture. It was a revolution. But it was fueled by this hysteria around them. And that's what we're talking about today. Hysteria. What makes people click over certain things? Not so much after last week's show where I talked about the Bible and I talked about how we have to watch out because people are putting in more emphasis on the Bible than on faith or what the Bible wants to teach. Yeah, so the Bible itself has become more important than the message it wants to get out. And I shared with you some really, really horrible situations where we were seeing it was unfolding in front of our eyes, and tragically, it is now just about everywhere, where people are picking up Bibles, deciphering it for themselves, saying, this is what the Bible says. And the method that they use is kind of an interesting method. It's taking whatever works for you. You know, they used to criticize people for being cafeteria Catholics or cafeteria Christians. In other words, you would go in much like a cafeteria and select the items that you want. So you go to a cafeteria, you get your tray, and you know, today you need, well, you want to start off with a salad. There's chicken salad, there's standard salad, there's Caesar salad. So you pick one of them and you put it on your tray. Then you go to the main entree and you see that, you know, they have sandwiches, they might have a burger. They also have some, you know, some kind of meat with gravy and some mashed potatoes. You select a main entree and then you go down, you select your dessert, you select something to drink. There's your cafeteria experience. You're going down the line, picking the things that you need. From a selection of entrees, you take one. From a selection of desserts, you take one. Well, they were criticizing because Christianity, they were calling it cafeteria style Christianity or Catholicism, more popular among them because they had a set of rules that many Catholics would adhere and say that I am a Catholic, but I do not subscribe to this particular rule. Same became true and is true among Christianity right now. We see that, you know, you take the bits and pieces that work for you. And this is one of the biggest dangers of Bible study. We see people take something that works for them, a passage, say, from Philippians, and then that coordinates with a passage that you have from Micah, and that somehow is corroborated by something you read in Leviticus, and you put this all together, and you've got something. And I shared with you, you could, you know, I am king. I am the king. I could prove that by the Bible. Why? Because the word I is in the Bible. Because the word am is in the Bible. Because the word a is in the Bible. And the word king is in the Bible. So I could take 1, 2, 3, 4 passages, put them all together. I am a king. Okay. So what? You know you're not a king, but what happens if you can get some hysterical movement to prove that you're a king? In other words, do some magical feats that would say, yeah, he is a king, and then you use the Bible as your authority. Ah, one of the biggest problems we have right now, people looking at the Bible to validate their points of view, without realizing that the Bible is something that was written many, many years ago. It was put together for a specific need of the church to get that faith across. And you need to know this. You need to put a timeline in front of your face because people will tell you otherwise, but history will show you. And that's why I always point to this timeline. It's very, very important that you have a timeline. God did not give us a Bible. Get it straight. No, God did not give a Bible. The Bible did not fall out of heaven. The reason why you have a Bible in your house right now, like it or not, is because there's a profit motive in it, okay? Bibles were not meant to be in everybody's house under people's pillows. They were a product of the church. It was a tool of the church. No. Don't. Before you say no, the Bible is true, accurate. No. Think about it this way. Before Jesus, was there a Bible? No. How about when Jesus came? Was there a Bible? No. How about when Jesus was crucified? Was there a Bible? No. How about when he resurrected? No, there wasn't. But before he resurrected, he established his church. How about 10 years after Jesus' resurrection? Was there a Bible? No, there wasn't. How about 20 years? No. But you know what there was 20 years later? There was the church. How about 100 years after Jesus resurrected? In the year 130, was there a Bible? No, there wasn't. Still no Bible, but there was a church. How about in the year 230, 200 years after the resurrection? No Bible. How about in the year 301, when the first nation to accept Christianity was revealed? Armenia accepted Christianity. Was there a Bible? No, there wasn't. But there was a church. There was a church. God's greatest gift to humanity is not a Bible. God gave us his only begotten Son. That is the greatest gift. That is the ultimate gift. That is on par with nothing else. Top. Jesus Christ did not give us a Bible. Nope, he didn't. He didn't write anything. He gave us something much more important, as is attested by what he left us with. The church, which was his living body, to be a witness to the resurrection, to the power of God. It was that church that many years later, and in fact did not all the way come through till the 5th century, all the way to the 5th century in the 400s, when the Bible as you know it, with all those books as you know it, came together. And then it was Martin Luther who about 1,000 years later decided that certain books didn't belong in there. So if you are part of the Protestant communion, you have a few less books than does the Armenian Orthodox and the Orthodox and the Catholic churches. What they conveniently call the Apocrypha is part of our canon. Now, all of that coming together? Hysteria? Well, let me tell you, something's going on. People are driving. What is it that makes people drive toward this hysterical idea? What made a group like the Beatles the phenomena that they were was because, well, let's face it, great musicians, incredible, right? Great music, put it all together, but there was a hysteria that was fueled by something. It's the same thing with the Bible. The Bible is completely true, but it's a phenomena that you've got to understand is unique. The Bible, the breath of God, comes to us in one form by the church. And it is one story, not meant to be picked apart, not meant to be taken and said, okay, I'll take this part because it sounds good and not the other. And the temptation to do that happens because we approach it. I'm not talking about cafeteriaizing it. I'm talking about our ability to manipulate. Have you ever thought about when you go to college, what is one of the first courses that they make you take during your first year? Statistics. Yeah, what is that course? Have you ever noticed? Yeah, it's like in everybody's curriculum, statistics. Hey, I'm not a math major. I didn't want to take that. No, no, no. You're taking statistics. Why? Because you can find out that you can, with statistics, you can just do about anything you want. You can manipulate statistics. Here in this country, in the United States, next year we have an election and people are going to use statistics to prove this or that. Crest is a toothpaste. It's a toothpaste. Its biggest competitor is Colgate. You will hear, and this is in advertising, 4 out of 5 dentists surveyed prefer Crest over Colgate toothpaste. Wow, that makes me think like, wow, 4 out of 5 dentists, that's a big percentage. Until I listen very closely to how that statistic was gathered, 4 out of 5 dentists surveyed. Oh, you mean not all dentists? No, not all dentists. 4 out of the 5 dentists that we surveyed preferred Crest. Now, we want to hope that maybe that pool of dentists survey was bigger. In other words, they're saying maybe out of 20 dentists, 16 preferred Crest. But listen to the language. 4 out of 5 dentists surveyed. Now, there's no promise that it's more than that 5. Now, who are those 5? Well, the ones that we surveyed. Doesn't say random survey. It says the ones we surveyed. Now, let's see. There's 5 dentists on one particular street, let's say. Or let's say in one little city, there's 5 dentists. And we as Crest will send them samples of Crest toothpaste. You know, those little tiny ones, so that they can give out to their customers. Oh, that's nice. That's so nice. Go to the dentist after all the drilling and all the hacking on your teeth. He turns to you and he gives you a little packet with some toothpaste in it. And you go, all right. Now, the dentist did not have to pay for that small little toothpaste, right? Somebody gave it to him as a promotion. Okay, now, dentist, remember us? We gave you that toothpaste. I'm going to ask you, which toothpaste do you prefer? I prefer your toothpaste. So 4 out of the 5 dentists surveyed preferred Crest. No lies. There's no lying there. It's all on the up and up. But what are we talking about? It's like you run in a race against your friend, right? And your friend wins, he's entitled to say, I won. You're entitled, and you lost, but you are entitled to say, I ran a race and I came in second. Yeah, that's legitimate. You're also entitled to say that I ran a race against my friend and he came second to last. I'm not lying. It's the truth. He came in second to last. There was only 2 of us running. Well, he came in second to last. That means I came in last. But no, you don't know what the pool is. So statistics can be used anyway. It's so bizarre. There is a guy right now in the Los Angeles area. I'll tell you, his name is Jabarian. He's publishing a rag sheet. It's called, I won't tell you the name. I don't want to even spread any of his garbage, but it is basically yellow journalism. And one of the claims to fame that he has is the world's largest Armenian independent newspaper, something like that. Widely circulated, the world's most widely circulated. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact wording, but basic idea is it's the most widely circulated Armenian newspaper. Now, do you wonder why? Well, because they take tons of them and they dump them in at the Armenian stores in the area. They send out free subscriptions to people. Without you asking, it just shows up in your mailbox. So, yeah, it is the most widely. It doesn't mean that it's the most loved. It doesn't mean it's the most well-read. In fact, I'm kind of sorry that my canary died because now I don't need his paper to line the bottom of my canary cage. You know, I mean, think about it. Just because he says it, though widely circulated, doesn't mean anything. They're just words. Just words. The Father Voskin video I was talking about, 86,000. Quantified. Go down to the bottom. There's YouTube telling you this is how many are there. Now, I could say, I could make some big statements about that. The world's largest largest audience for Armenian Christian videos. Well, yeah, but I'm the only one making Armenian Christian videos. Or maybe there's two or three, right? So out of the two or three, it's not like there's a big giant pool, thousands of them out there. Got to remember these things. That's why I think that so many colleges put statistics in the early days of the courses, because you're going to be working, you're going to be doing papers, you're going to need to prove different theses, ideas that you have. You want to be able to prove them in a proper and ethical manner. So we come to the idea of hysteria. Why are people so hysteric about the Bible? Now, I shared with you last week that, you know, it's a crime, really, to me. It's a moral crime when people come and they take bits and pieces to prove what they want to say. No sooner had I said this, I think 2 days later, I received this magazine in the mail. It's called Bible Study Magazine. It's the September-October issue. I had no idea such a magazine even existed. And what are they talking about? Strategies for meaningful Bible studies. Enjoy this free sample issue and get more as they're coming. So I opened it up and I said, what is this all about? And it's talking about, you know, take your Bible study group to Jerusalem. And here for a few thousand dollars, we can get you to go through this. What kind of passage is it? A quick guide to the Bible's literary genres. How about which translation is important for you? Or this one was my favorite. Greek for beginners. Okay, don't you dare try to read the Bible without knowing Greek. Now, guess what? Do you believe that there are Christians who are Christians without reading the Bible? I do. I know many illiterate people and knew more illiterate people in the past who proclaimed themselves as Christian, who by all standards of understanding led a Christian life, felt and would be heartbroken if you told them that they weren't Christian, but they didn't read the Bible. Not because they didn't want to, they couldn't. But for a long time, it was not because people wanted to either. Because you understood that Christianity was more than reading a Bible. And this Bible Studies magazine that came, it just really borderlines on hysteria. It's like how to choose the Bible translation that's right for your group. A 6-week small group study for teens, how to fight. The life principles of the Bible. Well, with the Bible, people are taking it and they're using it for their own agendas. And I shared this with you last week, and it's so hurtful just watching this guy talking, using the Bible to promote hate, hatred towards people who did not believe in what he believed, who had a different understanding, a different viewpoint. Hatred, pure hatred, to the point that he said that these people need to be executed. Yes. I mean, I was shocked. And he's doing it in the name of Christianity, in the name of the Bible, so much so that they need to be executed. And when he said, but I am a Christian and I cannot do the execution, therefore the state needs to round everybody up who follows that particular understanding and kill them. I mean, it was shocking. Now, here's the bigger shock. He was saying this inside of a church that was filled with people that were saying amen, that were clapping, applauding, and all in the name of Christianity. See, you can't do that. You can't put Christ's name to hatred. Christian is taking Christ's name. It's taking Christ's name in vain when you tie it in with hatred. And we're seeing this more and more. People taking what they want. It's this hysteria that is building up around that faith that was so pure at one time and has now become more of this legal doctrine where we take the Bible and we take bits and pieces that we like and makes it work, makes our opinion work, not God's opinion, and we forget about the compassion. And I strongly believe this. I will go on record to say this. Why is it that we're so quick to remember all of these Old Testament stories about wars, about people killing each other, beating up each other, about kings killing off little children, infanticide, and all this, and we're ready to remember these stories, and we forget about the story of the Good Samaritan? Why aren't we promoting the story of the Good Samaritan? Why are we not promoting Matthew chapter 25? I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was in prison and you visited me. Why aren't we talking about these particular things? How about talking about love your neighbor as yourself? How about talking about that we are all equal in the sight of God? There is no Jew. There is no Greek. There is no male. There is no female. For we are all one. We are all one in Christ. Why aren't we talking about these? How about love never ends? Why is it that we get to pick and choose certain things that people want us to listen to, but these other ones we're silent about? Maybe because we're not promoting this. That's what this ministry has been about. That's what Armadoxy's been about. Saying that, okay, here's a balance to what you've been hearing. I'm going to talk more about this and talk specifically about hysteria coming up in the second portion. We're going to tie it in also with the hysteria around the Holy Cross, because this Sunday happens to be the celebration of the exaltation. And think about it, the exaltation is a hysterical event. Yes, we're going to be talking about that in the second portion. I'm going to take a break right now. We do every week by playing a song that puts us in the mood and showcases some beautiful talent that I happen to like. And I think that's okay, because from what I hear from you, you like the music that I play. Here's today's selection.
I see you better now, shaded in deeper blue, hardly needing to carry love. Find your way, lamp, down to the river. And tonight flies a better moon. At water buffalo, life fast near the shallows, a splash revealing the fly catching fishes, dark gods silently watching. And tonight flies a better moon. You've known lovers here, compliant in passion, softly laid in the old reed bed, harshly lit in the noon sun. And tonight flies a better moon. Light, new as the virgin dawn, shrouded sweetly in all kinds of mystery. You turn, smile, and then I've gone. And tonight lies a better moon. And tonight lies a better moon. And tonight lies a better moon.
Ian Anderson off of the Secret Language of Birds album. Just a very, very special one. And I think you can make the connection, those of you who are following our discussion on hysteria, between hysteria and what we're going to talk about in a few moments. And of course, the moon. Possibly a better moon. Check out our show notes. We'll have a link to Secret Language of Birds by Ian Anderson. As we do every week, encourage these incredible musicians that fill up our lives.
Why do the faithful have such a wish to believe in something and call the name they choose, having chosen nothing?
Hysteria. What makes people want to get hysterical? Whether it's religion, whether it's music, or in certain cases, about things. As we will see, this Sunday happens to be the celebration. It's one of the major five feast days of the Armenian Church, of Christian Church. It is called the Exaltation of the Holy Cross. Now, the Holy Cross was kept captive. You know the story. I won't go into the story. We could put a link on today's show notes for the entire story, but I want to talk about the phenomena that happened afterwards. The exaltation. In other words, they lift up Jesus' cross and they venerate it. And you talk about hysteria, this is it. Yes, the exaltation of the Holy Cross is basically a hysterical event, an event in which people saw this object and approach it in hysteria. Excitement. Excitement. Is that a better way? Is it nicer to say they were excited about it? Yeah, well, they were. You find the cross of Christ, anybody would be excited. But you look at some of the other things, like this morning we were watching this video about the Lourdes and the water that pours out of the Lourdes and the apparition that was made. And we know throughout Christendom, especially in places such as Armenia, in Jerusalem, we know that there are places like this where people will approach and connect with the objects of the faith. Instead of connecting with the story of the Good Samaritan, we're excited that some water flowed through Samaria, right? And may pick up that water. And I'm not making any judgment on anybody's faith. I'm just pointing to a reality that exists in life. People like to do these tangible things because the other one is abstract. You know, you need to be good. Christianity, you need to love your neighbor. That's kind of abstract, but concrete. Here's some water that's flowing out of a place, or there is a picture, and the eyes were puddling up. There were tears coming out of that painting, or there is stigmata. There is blood coming out of the hands over there, okay? And so these are very tangible, real things, and certainly in the case of these apparitions that take place, they point to different places and we get hysterical about these places. Not too much different from what we heard earlier. One is about music that is inciting the soul in a unique way. So too, our faith. And in the same way, people who have come to religion sometimes go to those extremes where they take a Bible and they will pick it apart, pull it apart to validate their particular belief system. And you got to be cautious of this. So, you know, I was an undergraduate psychology major, and we learned a lot about different things. And I do remember talking about one of our professors pointed out that hysteria comes from the Greek word for uterus, hystera, which is, you know, the uterus is taken out. It's called hysterectomy, right? Yes. Same word, same word. So I remember, right, and I wanted to say, wow, where are those notes? I want to see them. But then I went to the ultimate note taker in the universe, which is Wikipedia. No, aren't we? Isn't it fantastic that we could just Google anything we want? Things come up. Anyway, I put in hysteria, I put in uterus, got a few different hits, but the hysteria post on Wikipedia kind of fills it all. Let me share it with you right now, and definitely we'll put a link on the show notes. Hysteria colloquially means ungovernable emotional excess. I like that, okay? Ungovernable emotional excess. Now, we heard that a few minutes ago, right? We know in the Beatlemania kind of model of it, it's uncontrollable. You start shaking, you go throw yourself on the floor, and we see hysteria happen with religion as well, right? The entire term holy roller exactly means that, right? The holy roller, why do they call them holy roller? The fanatics. Because they actually roll down. They roll down on the aisles. If you've ever been to a holy roller church, that's what it is. They actually do cartwheels, somersaults. They roll because hysterically they're excited. Uncontrollable, ungovernable emotional excess. Continue reading. Generally, modern medical professionals have abandoned using the term hysteria to denote a diagnostic category. Oh, did I learn that quickly? I dared. We had one of our girls was a psych major recently, and we were talking, and I made the poor choice of words of talking about a psychotic behavior. No. We don't use psychotic anymore. Okay, we don't use psychotic. Same way, we don't use hysteria to note diagnostic category, okay? Replacing it with more precisely defined categories, such as somatization disorder. In 1980, the American Psychiatric Association officially changed the diagnosis of hysterical neurosis conversion type to conversion disorder. Okay, these are words. But let's look at the origins. While the word hysteria originates from the Greek word for uterus, hystera, the word itself is not an ancient one. And the term hysterical suffocation, meaning a feeling of heat and inability to breathe, was instead used in ancient Greek medicine. The Greeks believed that the uterus moves through a woman's body, eventually strangling her and inducing the disease. This suggests an entirely physical cause for the symptom, but by linking them to the uterus, suggests that the disorder can only be found in women. Historically, hysteria was thought to manifest itself in women, female hysteria, with a variety of symptoms, including anxiety, shortness of breath, fainting, insomnia, irritability, nervousness, as well as sexually forward behavior. These symptoms mimic symptoms of other more definable diseases and create a case for arguing against the validity of hysteria as an actual disease, and it is often implied that it is an umbrella term for an indefinable illness. Okay, so there's the history of it, the origins of it. Let's go to the modern concept. Through the 20th century, the label hysteria was applied to a mental rather than a uterine or physical affliction. Hysteria is no longer thought of a real ailment. In modern usage, the term hysteria connotes mass panic, mass hysteria. Hysteria was often associated with events such as the Salem witch trials. The term hysterical, applied to an individual, can mean that they are emotionally or irrationally upset. Applied to a situation that does not involve panic, it means that situation is uncontrollably amusing, the connotation being that it involves hysterical laughter. Okay, so we've used this term, and we do use it in the case that we're using today in reference to religion, in reference to people being hysterical about different ideas and concepts validated by the Bible. Yes, it is appropriate. First of all, it is irrational. Second of all, it's completely emotional, and we're not classifying it as a disease, although sometimes you may want to think it is, the way people are so fanatic about it. We're not classifying it as a disease, but we're talking about this mass hysteria. People's lifestyles are being questioned. The way they lived are being questioned, and they are being hit upon by in the name of religion, worse than in the name of religion, in the name of Christ. Interestingly enough, this week, Time Magazine features Margaret Atwood on the cover. And talks about The Handmaid's Tale. She's coming out with a sequel, what's going on, and basically a prophecy. And it's fascinating because if you've read the book, and I understand they've made it into a movie or into a sequel, but if you read it, what they're doing is they're saying that, you know, this is what can happen when the hysteria, this irrational understanding. And many people believe that this is about Christianity. And rightly so. I mean, the fanatic Christian right is right up there. But this is not what Christianity is about. And this is why it's so important when we talk about Armodoxy, when we talk about the Armenian Christian faith, to understand that we are pre all of this hysteric movement. That the Armenian Christian faith goes back to the time of Christ. It is apostolic. In other words, we understood that Christ's message was about love and understanding and unity. So all of a sudden you get this image out there, and you know, Atwood with The Handmaid's Tale. It's fascinating because what happens in this society, totalitarianism, which is caused because people have become so fanatic and hysterical about the faith. And what I'm challenging you today is to think about this idea of hysteria. A lot of times in our faith, in our understanding, we get hysterical rather than looking for the rational. And this is so true when it comes to feasts like the Exaltation of the Holy Cross. Last year, if you recall, I shared with you a story because Susan and I happened to be in New York on the feast. I was given this unique, beautiful opportunity, honor to celebrate the Divine Liturgy and offer the sermon on this major feast day at the Cathedral of St. Vartan in the presence of the Primate. I mean, you try to put the ego away. But it is that ego that gets excited because you realize that you have this opportunity to connect to something higher. And there was a lot of emotions flowing through me, but nothing to replace the emotions that we had that evening, because the Primate Bishop Daniel had a piece of the cross of Christ, which was there at St. Vartan's, and he brought it out for a very special procession that was that he separated from the Divine Liturgy. Usually, if you go to Armenian churches, it'll be done because we can't get people to come back to the church, but he separated from the Divine Liturgy so that more can come, because in the evening what he did is he invited the priests in the outlying area around New York City to come and participate. So there were several priests in procession. We went out and we participated in the Exaltation of the Holy Cross, and the Holy Cross was venerated. And what a beautiful evening that was. but it also gave me an opportunity to really think that, okay, we get emotional about these things. Yes, we can understand hysteria. We can even understand the irrational, because when you look at it, or by any scientific standard, you put that piece of cross under the microscope, it is basically wood cells that you see, right? That's it. And the scientific community will say, that's it. It is void of emotions. It is wood cells. But we ascribe those emotions to them. Why? Because certain things that have taken place in our lives. And that's the exaltation of the cross. That's why the cross was venerated, why it was lifted up. It was held in captivity. But when you understand that now it is liberated and it is the way to salvation, it has a unique meaning. And that's what I'm challenging you with today. Not to take these hysterical moments, hysterical stands or steps without understanding that behind them they have to have something more. They have to have it because life has to have meaning. Faith has to have meaning. Religion has to have meaning. You cannot just exist and say these are a set of rules and regulations because this is what we have decided. No, this is what God has decided. No, you can't say that. You cannot be the spokesperson for God. You can only sit there humbly and be in awe of all that is around you. Isn't that the case when you look up at the sky, when you look up at the heavens at night, you are left in awe. And whether it's the most advanced scientist or the most simplest shepherd who is looking up at that star, at the galaxies and the universe above on a dark night, you are left in a state of awe. And that awe turns into that hysteria, emotional hysteria for you when you realize that there is a purpose for you. And that's what I'm challenging you to do. The Feast of the Holy Cross this Sunday is about finding that purpose. You see, Christianity is not about roses and good feelings and good smells in life. It's about a cross. It's about suffering. It's about persecution, but not for the sake of persecution. It's understanding that in this life you do have problems. As our Lord says, you will have troubles. But courage! The victory is mine. I have overcome this world. Can you, in your life, overcome the difficulties? Whether they are medical, health issues, relationship issues, whatever your cross is in life, you realize that that is not an end. And when you realize that that cross is not an end, you realize that there is something greater than the difficulties that you face. That's why, to me, it's so beautiful that the Armenian Church cross is void of a figure on it. Yes, the crucifix. I think we do a disservice a lot of times to our people to not put the crucifix out, because the crucifix does point to the suffering. But in turn, an empty cross points to the resurrection, which is our hope. Beyond those crucifixion, there is that hope. And that is what's worth getting excited about. That is what the hysteria is about. That is what the exaltation is about. And what I'm challenging you is to look around you this week. You will see so many people hysterical about different things. Tonight there's going to be the Democratic, debate. Yes, to get ready for next year's election. There will be people who will get hysterical about it, will get emotional, will get hot about it. They'll be tweeting right and left about what's going on and who are these people. Okay, why? Because you realize that there is a lot at stake. At stake is a nation, and you have that ability to make that change through your vote, through your participation in the electoral process. So in a sense, that excitement is warranted because there is a purpose. So too in your life. the excitement that you feel about God, about the presence, about Jesus Christ being in your life, has to serve something greater than your own selfish motives. By this I mean you don't read a Bible because you want to understand who God is. You're never going to be able to do that, and certainly not by reading a Bible. But you will understand God. Yes, you're never going to be able to do that, because once you understand it, it's no longer God. God is beyond understanding. So accept it as the mystery it is. Now challenge yourself to see the things that you do get excited about. The books that you read, the movies that you see, the music you listen to, the relationships that you have, your children, your parents, whatever it is that excites you, challenge yourself now to see those as opportunities to propel yourself to something bigger. By this is what I mean. We have to start understanding that we are children of this world and there are purposes for our lives. We are not just sitting here to get excited for the sake of excitement. Just like the exaltation of the cross. It means nothing that they lifted up the cross, that they exalted it, that they elevated it, that they celebrated it. It means nothing that I went to New York and kissed a cross on the feast of the exaltation. What does mean something is when we take that and we understand that it points to something greater. The things that are important in our lives are when we have the ability to help others. This is what I was talking about earlier. The whole idea of reading Bible for the sake of Bible so that we could understand God's will and his understanding and everything is not what the Bible was there for. It's to point us in the way of Christ, to show us that Christ came with a unique message, that there is an opportunity for us to find peace in our lives, find peace globally, and that's through the unity that we have to share, to understand that we are all God's children, and to share those messages with one another. It's not a pick and choose thing, but if you want to say it's a cafeteria, then yes, I will be a cafeteria where I will choose the golden rule, the story of the Good Samaritan, about removing the log out of my own eye, and about understanding that the worries of today are enough, and to look at the birds of the air, and most importantly, I will select the story of the cross. Because each of these stories is uniquely Christian. They all point to Jesus Christ. And the story of the cross is this excitement. It is this hysteria with which we need to approach it. Not because it's two perpendicular pieces of wood intersecting one another, but because they symbolize something greater than ourselves. That's the challenge. To find those things in your lives and to understand that there is something greater beyond it. Just like the cross of Christ, there's a symbiosis between the crucifix and the empty cross of Christ. And much like in astronomy, there are things known as twin stars. Did you know that? There are certain stars that are dependent on one another. They are in gravitational pull of one another. And they revolve around another. One of them explodes, the other one explodes. One of them goes out of whack, the other one goes out of whack. You need one to make the other one have meaning. The other one needs the other to have meaning too. So too with the cross of Christ. The crucifix can only be understood with the empty cross behind it. The empty cross can only be understood in the context of crucifixion. Christ rose to be crucified. After that, there was a resurrection. You cannot have a resurrection without the crucifixion. The crucifixion will only have meaning when you know that there is a resurrected Christ, when there is an empty cross beyond it. I leave you with this one little thought today, that on the road to Calvary, on the road to Golgotha, where Jesus was going to be crucified. They had just tried him, they had beaten him, they had humiliated him, and now they were making him carry his cross to this hill to be crucified. And there in Jerusalem was a man named Simon the Cyrene. He was from Cyrene. And they pulled Simon out and they said, carry Jesus' cross. This poor guy, he's just in Jerusalem. They say, hey, get over here. Do this. Little did he know that he would make history. He carries Jesus' cross. And he goes up to Golgotha. But when he gets to Golgotha, who is the one that has to climb the cross? Jesus. Not Simon. Now, each and every one of us hopes and prays that we can have a Simon in our lives. Somebody to help us carry our crosses, whether they are health issues, relationship issues, financial issues, we all carry a cross. And wouldn't it be nice if we could find someone from Cyrene, a Simon to help us carry our crosses? And what I'm here to tell you is that we do have that. It's called the church. The church is here to be the Simon in our lives. At the end, there's no escaping. You have to climb the cross. You have to get up on that cross. But with the full knowledge of knowing that that cross is temporary. It's not the end. And so knowing that it is temporary, you have the hope of resurrection. Do not be scared of that cross, but know that along the way, our church needs to be. That's what Jesus came to set up his body as. The body that would do the work of Christ in this world. That's what it's about. That's what the church is. It's that Simon of Cyrene that helps us take that cross all the way to Golgotha. At the end, it's ours. We have to claim it. We have to rise to it, knowing full well that it is a temporary affliction. But along the way, let us become the church. Now, do you understand what I meant by hysteria? Because when you understand the cross, when you understand what it means, when you understand that resurrection and you exalt it, you put it up, you now understand that the path to it means that you have to get involved. It means that you have a purpose, your purpose in that church to be that Simon, to help others in their time of need, because people have reached out to you, because the church is there for all of us to lean upon, to know that it gives us this solace, it gives us the strength, and it allows us to rise to that cross, and it guarantees that there is a bigger life beyond it. Tell me, is that something to get excited about? Hysterical about? You bet. Okay, the piano player's here, and let's see if Susie gets hysterical about her message. Well, anyway, she gives it. Here it is.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that message, and thank you to our listeners for all the support, the love, the emotions, and your notes. I got a wonderful note this week. It says that listening to the Next Step, it's like, well, I do it during my exercise, and it's like having a friend with me. And that to me was just beautiful because, yeah, that's what we want to be. When we come on this microphone, I want to know that there are friends on the other side who are listening, because I really feel your friendship through all the love and all the support and comments that you share with us. God bless you all, and God bless you with I want to say, lighter crosses as we're facing the big feast of exaltation. Light crosses, but don't be scared. That's my wish for you, is that you find the courage to reach out and see your crosses as challenges, to see the bigger cross, which is that empty cross on the other side. Well, I want to call it a day today, and thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. And in the meantime, we have some travel plans in the next few weeks. We will be recording on location and sharing so much with you, so don't miss out. Meanwhile, do connect with us at all the usual outlets where social people get together, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, name it, we're there. And of course, inissues.org. Love to hear from you. Drop us a line at feedback@epostle.net. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off power! On top, there's it.